26. All right, let's say good morning. Let's begin. So we're starting the Mishnah, top of Ayin Zayin Amud Aleph. Ha'ish shenoldu bo mumin. So we'll say if a man developed mumin, a man developed blemishes. So we're going to spend a lot of time today speaking about blemishes. So if a man developed blemishes, so what's the halacha? The Mishnah says, Ein kofin osa lahotzi. We do not go ahead and force him to divorce his wife. I'm Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, when is that true? Be'med ramun, be'mumin haktanim. That's only true with small mumin. However, aval be'mumin hagdolim, kofin osa lahotzi. But with large mumin, or perhaps better stated, more than large, better stated would be significant mumin. Ultimately, again, we would go ahead and force him to divorce her. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Yehuda, top of Ayin Zayin. Says the Gemara, Rav Yehuda Tani, Noldu, Chiyah Barav Tani, Hayu. We'll say, interestingly enough, there are different versions of the Mishnah. In Rav Yehuda's version, he has Noldu. We'll say, Noldu means that these Mumin came up now, but were not present earlier. Chiyah Barav, on the other hand, has them as Hayu, that the Mumin were already there. So, meaning even prior to marriage. Samanda Amar Noldu, the man Amar who says that the Mumin were, so to speak, born, that they came up after the marriage, Kol Shekein Hayu. So we'll say, remember, if when Mumin, so remember, what this, the ruling of the Mishnah is that if a man has Mumin, so ultimately, again, we don't force him to divorce his wife. If his wife says, I can't stay married to you like this. So that two different versions of the Mishnah. One version of the Mishnah had that the man had the woman prior to the marriage. Second version of the Mishnah is that the man developed the woman during the marriage. So I will say, if you say that we don't force him to divorce her in a situation where he developed the woman, then it goes without saying that what? That if he had the woman prior to the marriage, of course we don't force him to divorce her. Why? Tikasavra v'kibla. Because we'll say, if he had the woman before the marriage, that means that what? She knew about those women, and yet she still went ahead and she married him. Man da amar hayu. So the man da amar who says that the Mishnah's ruling is where he had the woman prior to the marriage, aval noldu lotna. But they're both saying, in a case where he developed them during the marriage, then the wife would have every right to go ahead and sue for divorce. So tnan, we learned in the Mishnah. So remember again, then Rav Shimon Gamliel said, but when is this true, that we don't force a husband to divorce his wife for mumin, meaning his mumin? That's only true with mumin kitanim, small blemishes, or relatively minor blemishes. Aval b'mumin gedolim, but with significant blemishes, kofin oso lahotzi. Then halach l'maisa, we do in fact force the husband to go ahead and divorce his wife. Bishlam alamando amar noldu, Hainu the shiny bein gidolim mikitanim. Furthermore, Rosa, I understand according to Madam who says that it's noldu, that these are things that came up once the marriage was already during marriage. Then hainu the shiny bein gidolim mikitanim. So we'll say, if you understand the Mishnah is talking about that the husband develops mumin over the course of marriage, then I understand why there's a discussion about significant blemishes versus less significant blemishes, because these are all things that are coming up now. However, El Leman Domra Hayu, but according to Mantamu says the Mishnah is talking about a case where he had the woman prior to the marriage, then asked the Mishnah, we asked the Gemara, Mali Gidola Mali Ketanim. Who cares about significant or insignificant women? At the end of the day, Ha Savra V'Kibla. Both say, if we are talking about women that existed prior to the marriage, then Lamaisa again, she knew about them before the marriage, and therefore Aloha Lamaisa what? She accepted it. If she accepted them, then what does it matter, large woman or small woman? To which the Gemara says, this is very interesting. To which the Gemara, Hasar v'kibla, kisvurihi, shiachola l'kabel, va'akshav in yachol l'kabel. Because both said there are times where what? She thought that she would be able to live with the woman, and then it turns out that she can't. Says the Gemara, Ve'elohin mumin gidolim. Now let's define our terms a little bit. So remember, again, we're still left with our fundamental dispute in the Mishnah about, is it a case of where the mumin were there prior to the marriage or only have developed after the marriage? So that machlokas is still there. And now it's from Shimon Gamliel's distinction between mumin gidolim and mumin kitanim. So the Gemara says, what falls into each of these categories? Ve'elohin mumin gidolim. These are the large women. Perish of Shimon Gamliel kigon nismis eno. We'll say, so an example of a major mum would be, person became blinded in one eye. I'm sorry. person became blinded in one eye, or nikta yado, or his hand, he lost his hand, was amputated, hand was cut off, nishpura raglo, or his foot was shattered in a way that it's not going to heal. Itma Rabbi Abba Bar Yaakov, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, halacha Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So we'll say, so again, Rabbi Abba Bar Yaakov said in Rabbi Yochanan, the halacha falls Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, namely, that lemaisa for mumin kitanim, so we don't force him to divorce her, but for mumin gindolim, we would force him to divorce her. I will say, obviously, when we say force him to divorce her, that's only if she wants a divorce. If she says, I can't live with this, then Enachnami from Mumin Gidolim, we would support her claim and would force him to give a get. Rava Amar Rav Nachman, Halacha Kedivei Chachamim. Rava, on the other hand, says, name Rav Nachman, that Halacha Falz Chachamim, that for Mumin, we do not force the man to go ahead and divorce his wife. Omi Amar Rabbi Yochanan Hachid, but did Rabbi Yochanan actually say that the Halacha follows Rav Shimon Gamliel? We have a general clown that the halacha always has Rav Shimon Gamliel in the Mishnah, except for three cases. Chutz, Me'arev, Tzidon, V'raya Achron. Except for, we'll say, for these three cases, which we're not going to get into now, to which the Gemara says, Amoroyim Ninhu, V'aliv Rav Yochanan. Enoch Inami, it's Machlokis Amoroyim, about what Rav Yochanan said. Did Rav Yochanan say that the halacha has Rav Shimon Gamliel or not? So we'll say, just so you should know, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins. So this is in Evan Ha'ezer, Hilchos Gittin, Simen Kuf Nun Dalet Sev Dalet, Ha'ish Shenoldu Ba Mumin Acha Shenas. Now the Shulchan Aruch goes with the approach that the Mishnah is talking about a case of Mumin that developed after marriage. Because remember again, Mumin that exists before marriage and the wife is fully knowledgeable about cannot be grounds to force a divorce. Why? Hasavra V'kibla. Because she knew about it, and she accepted it. Now, granted, even if she says, I thought I could live with it, I can't live with it, that's fine, but that doesn't give her necessarily the right to demand divorce. But
strictly physical, not psychological?
No, but there could be psychological issues as well. Same thing. So the Shulchan Aruch says over here, again, if Mumin develop in the man, after they got married, afilu niktas yada oraglo, even if he lost his hand or he lost his foot, onismas einov, or he was blinded, and his wife no longer wants to live with him. We do not force the man to divorce her and give her a ksuva. Right? So ultimately, again, she cannot go ahead and sue for divorce under these circumstances. So we paskin like the Chachamim, we make a distinction between Mumin Gedolim and Mumin Kitanim, and therefore she cannot sue for divorce. Now the Ramah makes a very interesting qualification. The Ramah says, Haga, t'chol ze biyada o raglo eno achas. This is assuming he lost one eye, he lost one leg, or he lost one arm. Aval bebez yadav, bez raglov, kofin, bez enov, kofin oso lahotzi. It's close over here, the Rush, who says that if he lost both eyes, both legs, or both arms, which was essentially would mean that what? He's totally incapacitated. Totally incapacitated. Then under those circumstances, again, the woman would have the absolute right to go ahead and ask for a divorce, and she would be granted it together with her ksuba. Says the Mishnah. Ve'ilu shekofen osa lahotzi. Now, Bosei, now, apparently, after we said the first Mishnah, there is another Mishnah now that follows up and says, oh, but there are cases where she can demand divorce. What are those cases? Mukashchin. If the husband is afflicted with boils, ubaal polifus, or if he has polifus, we'll discuss what that means. Vahamekamitz. Now, we'll say mekamitz literally means a gatherer. We'll discuss what that means. Vahametzareif nechoshes, one who refines copper. Vahabursi, a tanner. So we'll say now, we don't know what gatherer is. We don't know what refiner. I mean, we know what a refiner of copper is. We don't know what the problem is. Bursi already we know. Bursi is a tanner. Tannery, if you've ever been to a tannery, right, it smells terrible. And the idea over here is if you were a tanner, so often what would end up happening is you would assume that olfactory offensiveness. Right? So you would go ahead and right, you would stink. So obviously a woman could say, listen, you know, I can't live with this. She would have a right to demand divorce. Bein shahayu ad shelo nisu, bein mishenisu. This is true whether a man did these things, meaning, let's say, these are all occupations, or states, I should say, not all occupations. Whether he did this before they got married, or only after they got married, va'al kulam amar Rabbi Meir, afa pi shehisna imo, Yechol lihisha tomar svura hayisi shani yechol lekabel va'achshav eini yechol lekabel. So we'll say, interestingly enough, so that the Rabbi Meir says that even if she knew he was a tanner, for example, it's true with all the cases, she knew he was a tanner, but lemaisa again, and he said, listen, I come from a long line of tanners, this is the family business, just want to make sure you're okay with this. And she says, yes, love conquers all. And then she realizes, except for that stench. Right? So then what happens? She says, no, I can't go ahead and deal with this anymore. So halacha l'maaseh, she could still go ahead and sue for divorce. Necham say mikabelas yakarcha chutz mimukashin. Necham, again, I argue and they say no. No, if ultimately, again, she was aware of these situations prior to getting married, then she does not have the right to say, I'm sorry, I can't do this anymore, and sue for divorce. Chutz mimukashin, with one example, with one exception, which is if he's afflicted with boils. Mipnei shemam kaso, because ultimately, again, what the Gemara is going to explain is that relations become impossible because relations adversely, or we should say relations aggravate his situation. So the Gemara says, Maaseh b'tzidon, b'bor si'achot shemes. So we'll say there was a situation in Sidon where there was a tanner who died. Now this tanner died without children. So his wife fell for Yibum before his brother. And literally, tannery was the family business. So the brother was a tanner also. And Amru Chacham, the Chacham say, listen to this, you know what, your brother, I was able to deal with it. You, I'm not going to deal with it. In other words, I will say, what she's saying is that just because, the Mishnah is telling us, is just because we see that she was able to be married to a tanner does not automatically mean that she'd be willing to be married to any tanner. And therefore, the Maaseh, she'd have this, would she wake up one day and say to her husband, I don't want to be married to you anymore because you're a tanner, that would not be a valid claim to get her ksuva. But Lamaisa, again, when her husband dies, she don't say just because she was married to a tanner, therefore she could do yibam with a tanner. Also, she could refuse the brother. Says the Gemara, my ba polifos. What's polifos? So the Gemara says, Amravi Hudam Shmuel, Reach Achotam. It's an odor that comes from the nose. And apparently, again, it's very repulsive. So if a man had that, his wife would be able to say, I can't live with this. Chronic bad breath would be grounds, ultimately, again, for her to say to her, at least according to the first opinion of the Mishnah, for her to say to her husband, Lamaisa, I want out of this marriage. Rav Asi Masni Ipcha, Rav Asi had it just the opposite. Again, same idea, simachlokes, just each name was attributed to the other one. That it would have ultimately been Shmuel who said Reach HaPeh, it would have been Shmuel that said bad breath, and it would have been the Braisa that said an odor from the nose. Rav Asi Masni Ipcha Umarach Basimna, and he gave a simon. Shmuel Apasik Pumemi Kula Perkin. That Shmuel ultimately, again, Shmuel's mouth never stopped moving from learning. So therefore, again, it's like the mouth association. It's the idea over here that Lemaisa Shmuel was the one who said it was bad breath. Fine. Va'amekameitz. So we'll say, what's a mekameitz? My mekameitz. Amar Rav Yehuda. Zah mekabeitz tzoas klavim. It's one who collects dog excrement. Now, we'll say, now, why is somebody collecting dog excrement? So if you look at Rashi, he says, mekameitz tzoas klavim. It's very interesting. Rashi says, Lo yadati matzorech ba. Rashi says, I have no idea why somebody would be doing this. He says, listen to this. Aval ba'ashkenaz ra'isi sheshorin bahem ha'begadim lifnei kibusan yomo yomayim. So apparently, again, in Ashkenaz, in Germany, so they used to go ahead and apparently use the dog excrement, I guess, as a form of detergent. They would go ahead and use it as a form of detergent, again, prior to actually laundering the clothing. I will say, now, the Rush asks on this, he says, I don't know why Rashi has such a big problem with this. We've learned elsewhere that dog excrement, right, or animal excrement in general, was used as one of the ingredients for tanning hides. And in fact, again, if you look at the next part of the Gemara says, Mesve mekameitz zo bursi. Right, the Braisa says that what's the mekameitz? What's the dog excrement collector? That's the tanner. It's the same guy. But here's the problem. According to that logic, tikshi l'chamas nisin. The Mishnah would be problematic. Why would the Mishnah be problematic? Ha-mekameitz v'ha-metzarif nechoshes v'ha-bursi. Here's the problem. In our Mishnah, the mekameitz and the bursi are reckoned as two separate individuals. Bishla mas nisin lo kasha. So Rabbi said, Bishla doesn't have to be a contradiction. Kan bebor si gadol, kan bebor si katan. Rabbi said, I guess what you'd call it is like a career tanner versus a recreational tanner, right? So therefore, again, the mekames could ultimately be considered the small time tanner, the recreational tanner, versus the borsi, which is the more full time tanner. To which the Gemara says, Rashi says, borsi katan shu ani v'yishla oros ma'at. He only has a couple of hides to go out and tan. El Rav Yehuda kasha. But according to Rav Yehuda, it's going to pose a question. To which the Gemara says, Tanoihi, it's machlokis tanoim. Tisanya, mekameitz ze borsi. Because most of the Braisa says that the mekameitz is the tanner. V'yish omrim azeh mekameitz tsoas kalavim. And others say, no, it's one who collects dog excrement. So most say, it's a fundamental machlokis as to what the definition of the mekameitz is in the Mishnah. But Hamatsarif Nechoshes Vaborsi. And I'm supposed to remember again, if one is Mitsarif Nechoshes, which means he's a refiner of copper, and the Borsi and the Tanner. So the Gemara says, my Mitsarif Nechoshes, what does Mitsarif Nechoshes mean? Rav Ashi Omar Chashli Dude. So look at this, we'll say, look at Rashi, Chashli Dude. Mechashlin Umiradadin Nechoshes. He hammers out plates of copper in order to go out and make copper utensils. So apparently, for whatever the reason, part of that process has a terrible odor. And then for the mice, again, when he works with it every single day, he's going to smell of it as well. So Rabbi Rachana says, no, it's one who mines copper. Tanya Kavasi, Rabbi Rachana, there's a bryce that supports Rabbi Rachana. Ezu Mitzarev, what's a Mitzarev? Zem Mechatech Nechoshes Meikaro. Someone who mines copper from the earth. Amaraf. Ha'omer eini zan ve'eini mefarnes yotzivi tein ksuva. So what's it? Rav said, if a man says to his wife, eini zan ve'eini mefarnes, I'm not supporting you, right? I'm not giving you any money. Eini zan ve'eini mefarnes, I'm not supporting you, right? I'm not giving you food. I'm not supporting you. You're on your own. So what's the halacha? Yotzivi tein ksuva. Okay, so if husband's going to do that, then he has to divorce his wife and he has to pay her ksuva. Also, Rabbi Lazar amar l'shmei tokamei de Shmuel. So Rabbi Lazar went and he said over this ruling in front of Shmuel, Amar achsua sa'ari le'elazar. Go and feed barley to Elazar. Rabbi Lazar, go and feed barley. Rashi says, achalua sa'ari, hechalua sa'orim, kebehema, kalanechal shlo kedarka karle koses. So go and feed him animal food. In other words, Rabbi Lazar, that Rabbi Lazar was not very happy, Shmuel was not very happy with this statement of Rabbi Lazar. And I will say, now this is not an attack. You know, the Rush points out that he was saying it's more in like a jocular fashion. But Lamaya says, I don't like this ruling. Why? Achikov and also Lahotzi, Yechafu Lazon. I will say, now Rabbi Lazar, Shmuel says something very interesting. If you're going to force him to do something, instead of forcing him to go ahead and divorce his wife, why don't you force him to what? Support his wife. Give her the mazonos and give her the money. Give her the parnasa. To which the Gemara says, Rav, Rabbi says, so why didn't Rav agree with this? And it's actually very profound. We had this before. Ain adam darim nachash pikfifa. Rabbi says, you can't live with a snake in a basket. In other words, it's not fair to ask a woman to live with a man like this, who is already obviously, Rabbi says, this is pretty low. You got to be pretty low on the midos ladder to be able to go ahead and say something like this to your wife. So you can't subject a wife to a marriage like that with a man who just at his own is going to decide not to support her. Because even though we could force him, remember, the process of forcing him to do it could take a little while. Meanwhile, she's stuck. So the Gemara goes right there. The Gemara says, okay, he saw the Rabbi Zera. What about when Rabbi Zera went to Eretz Yisrael? Ashkechel Rabbi Yonah bar Yafes, he found Rabbi Yonah bar Yafes, the Yosef v'kamar le mishmei de Rabbi Yochanan. That he went ahead and he was saying over this ruling in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Amarlei, and he said to him, meaning he was saying over the name of Rabbi Yochanan, this idea that instead of forcing him to go out and divorce her, let's force him to feed her. And he said, Amarlei, on that ruling, alda, achsua saran le'elazar b'bavel. For that ruling, they made Elazar eat grain, eat barley in bavel. Amarav Yehuda, Amarav, Asi, ein ma'asin el lepsolos. Bosa, we only force a man to divorce his wife if he is married to someone who he's not allowed to someone who's puzzled to him. When I said this in front of the Shmuel, so Shmuel said, what are examples? A coin is married to an Amman is married to a coin gadol, grusha or chalutza to a regular coin, mamzer is in a sin in Yisrael, or a bas Yisrael is married to an sin in the mamzer. Those would be situations where we would force the couple to get force husband to give her a get. But Rabbi says, if a man married a woman and they were childless for 10 years. Now, we remember, we actually learned this earlier. The halacha is, if you don't have children for 10 years, technically, husband is obligated to divorce the wife, marry someone else with whom he can have children. So the Gemara says, in a situation like that, in Kofano. So today, we no longer force a man to go ahead and take action in such a situation. If he chooses to remain married to her, that is his prerogative. Rav Tachlifa, so we'll say, so again, what Rav Yehuda is saying in Rav Asi is the only time we force divorce is in a situation of a legal marriage. But where the marriage is not resulting in offspring, which again is problematic, Lemaisa, we don't, assuming the marriage is legal, we don't force divorce. So the Gemara says the following, Tnan Eilu Shikofno Salahotzi, these are the situations where we force a man to divorce his wife, Mukashkin, Uba Polifus. So also remember, he's quoting our Mishnah. What did our Mishnah say? The cases where we go out and we force the man to divorce his wife is where, remember, he's afflicted with boils or all these different other states. Bishlam the Ravasi, Dirabana Katani, Diraisa lo Katani. So what's according to Ravasi, the Mishnah works fine. Why? Because the Mishnah is only speaking about the rabbinically mandated divorce cases. However, biblically mandated cases, such as a situation where a husband does not have children with his wife for 10 years, where we require him to divorce her, that the Mishnah does not go ahead and mention. El Rav Tachlifa Baravimi Listni Nasi Isha Vishayma Esther Sharon Velo Yolda, Kofinoso. But according to Rav Tachlifa Baravimi, why doesn't the Mishnah include the case of a man who was married to a woman for 10 years and they didn't have children that we would force him to divorce her? Amrav Nachman Lokasha, Habamili Habashuti. I will say, because you know what? We would force him to divorce her after 10 years without children, but Rav said there's a difference. In some cases, we force him with a stick, and in some cases, we force him with words. In other words, that there are some cases where we will use physical force in order to get him to comply with the mandate to divorce his wife, such as cases of illegal marriage, Kohen Gadol married to an Amana, Kohen Hedyot married to a Grusha, Yisrael married to a Mamzeres. Illegal cases will force him to divorce her, even if they have to use physical force, versus in other situations, like for example, when he is married to a woman that hasn't had children for 10 years, we're not gonna beat him up. But Lamaisa, again, we will strongly encourage him to divorce this woman and go ahead and marry someone with whom he can have children. To which the Gemara says, Maskifle Rabbi Abba, Bidvarim lo yusar even, but Rabbi Abba also quotes the Pasuk from Mishlei. And the Pasuk Mishlei says that with words, you cannot force the servant to do what he's supposed to do. So we see that again, using words to get someone to take action usually does not work. Rather, both cases, in both situations, we would go ahead and use force to go ahead and force him to divorce her. Top of Ayin Zayin Amud Beis. Hasam ki amra havina bahadei shafkina la. Hacha af agav da amra havina bahadei lo shafkina. So we'll say, what's the distinction? We'll say, in the cases in the Mishnah, where the husband has, whatever it is, chronic bad breath, or whatever it is, if a woman says, it's okay, I love him anyway, I'll live with it, so we leave it alone. Obviously, we don't force him to divorce her if she is okay with his issues. However, I will say, in the case of where they are childless after 10 years, even if she says, I'm okay with it, we still don't allow the marriage to remain, because Lemaisa, again, the fact that they're not having children is not her problem, but again, Lemaisa, it's a non-fulfillment of his biblical obligation of Pirei V'Rivya. V'harei Mukashchin, Ta'af Agav Da'amra Havina Ba'adei Lo Shavkin Allah. In the case of Mukashchin, where he's afflicted with boils, remember the Mishnah said that even if she says it's okay, I'll live with it, we do not allow the marriage to remain. This not chutz mi Mukashchin mipnei shemam kaso. Because remember, I will say, in the case of Mukashchin, if they live together, that will aggravate his physical circumstances. V'katani asam ki amra dairina bahadei b'sahadi shafkina lei. We'll say, listen to this. If she says, I'm willing to stay in this marriage with witnesses. So we'll say, apparently witnesses that they'll never be intimate together, thereby putting him thereby avoiding putting him in mortal danger. So if she's willing to sign up for such a marriage like that, okay, we let it. But I will say, over here, even if she were to say, I'll live together with witnesses, we're not going to let the marriage remain, because we'll say, obviously, living together with witnesses would be a foolish thing. The idea over here is, in the case where they don't have children for 10 years, even if she says that Lamaisa, she's willing to live with this situation, we would still force the hand of the husband to divorce her, because Lamaisa, the issue is not hers, but rather, again, the issue is his. So we'll say, just so you should know that halacha lemaisa, the way the Shulchan Aruch paskins, is that today the Shulchan Aruch says that we don't enforce this halacha. That although today when it comes to this, if a couple's childless after 10 years, then lemaisa again we leave it alone. Husband should realize that perhaps there is an obligation for him to try to do something to be able to have children. But lemaisa, if we see that they are perfectly content, or not perfectly content, but they plan on remaining married, then the halacha does not interfere in such a marriage. Tanya. So also Rabbi Yossi said that a certain elder of Yerushalayim said that there are 24 different types of shchin. But for all of them, apparently, again, tashmish, marital relations, aggravates the boils. But Rabbi said the worst type of shchin is what the Gemara calls rason. So the Gemara says, "Me my hobby." So how does a person contract ra'ason? So this sanya heki's dam v'shemesh. I will say, if a person did bloodletting and then engaged in relations, havin lo banim viskin. So I will say, viskin literally means feeble children. Feeble children. So a person, and I will say, obviously, again, remember, just the caveat to all of this is that this is not chazam. This is what everybody believed in those particular times, right? You go ahead and you have children after bloodletting, which means you've been sapped of some of your energy. Therefore, by definition, children conceived in a physically compromised state will be physically compromised themselves. Hekizu shnei mishimshu. If a man and woman both did bloodletting and then had relations, havilo bonim ba'ali rasan. Then ultimately, again, they'll have children. Ultimately, you have this rasan. Amra papa lo amr ela delo toimidi. This is only true if they didn't eat anything after bloodletting. But Rebbe will say if you ate something after bloodletting, then at least a cup of apple juice, right? That's orange juice, right? That's orange, right. So what happens? So avatoy midi. But if you ate something, then less blood. But then there's nothing to worry about. My sinde. Rebbe will say, what are the symptoms of ra'ason? Delfan ene, teary eyes. Vidai vi nechile, a constantly runny nose. Ve'isi la rira mepume. And a problem with salivating, constant salivating. Viramu de daivi iluye, and flies are always hovering around the person. Umayasuse, this is very interesting. And what is the cure? What is the medicinal cure for ra'ason? Amrabaye pila viludna. Pila both says pennyroyal. Ludna is wormwood. Girda daguza, the bark of a nut tree. The girda de ashpa, and shavings of a hive, the kalil malka, and a lily. And what do you do? Umaschala de dikla sumka. Let's say, if we take a look at Rashi over here, he says, maschala de dikla sumka, shomer shiishla tmarim be katnusan, kein shiishla gozum katanim. It's like the flower or the petal of an immature date. And what do? V'shalik luhu bahadadi. So it says homeopathic remedies. So what do? You go ahead and you take all of these items. You go ahead and you cook them together. Umayole lebesa deshishin. I will say now. Give me the warning before you go on. Do not try any of this at home. Listen to this. Umayole lebesa deshisha. And what happens? And you go ahead and you take him into a house of marble. I will say now, the reason why the Gemara talks about a house of marble is because marble homes very often kept out any kind of drafts. So you see what you need to really come into over here is a draftless house. V'ilo ika, and if you don't have a house of marble, v'ilo ika beis d'shisha, ma'ale lebeis d'shav livni v'aricha. You bring him into a house that has very thick walls, 7.5 bricks thick, so there's no wind. V'notale tlas me'akasi areshe. You pour 300 cups of this concoction on top of his head. Now watch this. Adirafye arisa demuche, until you soften up the soft part of the skull even more. Vikara lemuche, then open up the skull, right? Open up, peel back the skin on top. So I must say, now I have to tell you something absolutely amazing. What was amazing is somebody just forwarded this to me, I must say Shabbos. There's an article in CNN.com about like the most gruesome remedies that they used to employ. This is in there. This is mamish in there. It's amazing. So what happened? Then peel back the skin on top of the skull. Umaisi arba tarfei da'asa. Bring 4 leaves. Umadli kolchad kara. The boss says, apparently what they're talking about over here is the removal of some type of parasite. So what happens? So go ahead and peel back the skull. Lift up one leg of each, one leg, and you have to put the leg of the parasite underneath the leaf. Umosiv chad v'shakal b'tzivsa v'kalile. And then you have to go ahead and lift off the parasite off the, I guess it's off the membrane on top of the brain, or off, yeah, off the brain, the membrane on top of the brain. V'shakal b'tzivsa, take it off with tongs, right? V'kalile, and go ahead and burn it. You have to burn the parasite. D'ilo, because if you don't burn it, hader iluye, ultimately, again, it will come back. And I've also said, the Gemara does not talk about the survival rates from this particular procedure, but interesting nevertheless. So, I'm sorry?
You haven't asked Henry Brem about it?
I haven't asked him about it, no. So the Gemara says the following, Now, this is actually very interesting. That what happened? Rabbi Yochanan said, "Be very careful with the flies that circle around Bali Rasan." Rabbi Yochanan, remember, what is Rabbi Yochanan saying? They already realized that what? That insects carry disease. That insects are transmitters of disease. Therefore, if you see insects, you see the flies around someone who is afflicted with this Rasan, be very careful from those flies. Rabbi Zero, the Havayase Bezeka, will say, Rabbi Zero would not sit downwind of a person afflicted with Rasan. Rabbi Elazar Ayli Ba'ale, and Rabbi Elazar would not go ahead and sit in the same tent as someone afflicted with Rasan. Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Asi, Lahava Akli Mim Bai Dahi Mavua. Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Asi would not even eat from the eggs that came from the same mavoi, that came from the same courtyard, that really means the same city, as someone afflicted with Rasan. Rabbi Shulman Levi, Michrach, listen to this. Rabbi Shulman Levi, Michrach Pahu, Va'asik Petorah. Rabbi Yishuvan Levi would actually go very close. He would sit right next to people with Rasan, va'asik patora, and he would go ahead and he would learn. Amar ayelas ahuvin v'yalaschein. Because what happens? The Torah is beloved and ultimately engenders charm. Imchein ma'ale alam de'al agunaliv migna. Suppose I. If Torah gives you chen, does Torah not protect you as well? Now, you know what this is reminiscent of, you know, if you ever read the beautiful book, Chesedik in Our Time, Rabbi Ari Levin. So one of the things that Rabbi Levin, Chesedik Kachash Levracha, he always used to visit the lepers, right? The truth is, the Bali Rasan are probably people who everyone else distanced themselves from. And Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi Dafka went to visit them and used to sit with them and to learn next to them all the time. And he relied, again, on the protection of Torah to protect them from this disease. It's amazing. Ki Avashach, Rabbi said, listen to this. This is an amazing story. And Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi was getting ready to die. Amru le lemalach hamavis zil avid le reuse. So I said to the malach hamavis, go ahead, go appear to Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, and azil le reuse, do what he wants. So azil is chazile. So the malach hamavis appears to Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi. So Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi has an interesting request. He wants to see his portion of in Gan Eden now. Now, so go take, don't kill me yet, don't take my life, but I want to go now to see my portion in Gan Eden. Amar Leila Chai, so the Malach HaMavis says, okay, look, Bezin Shalmala told the Malach HaMavis, do whatever Rabbi Shulman Levi wants. So Rabbi Shulman Levi wants to see his portion in Gan Eden, let's go. So Amar Leila Havli Sakinach, so listen to this. Rabbi Shulman Levi says to the Malach HaMavis, give me your knife. I guess, I don't know, maybe like the Grim Reaper, you know, with the, I don't know if it's a sickle or a knife, whatever it is, says, give me your knife. Let's see, actually, you know, the Gemara also talks about this, that Lamaise, again, the Malach HaMavis carries around a sword, which ultimately has a little bit of Sam HaMavis, the Gemara says, on the end, that just poison something at the end, that ultimately drips into the mouth of a person right before they die, that ultimately takes their life. So Rabbi Shimon Levi says, give me your knife, Dilma Mevayis Liba Archa, because maybe you're going to scare me on the way, and you're going to take my life. In other words, Rabbi Shimon Levi says, I want to see my portion in Gan Eden while I'm still alive. So give me your knife, in order that I know you're not going to take my life. So Yavin Ahilim, so Malach HaMavis gives him the knife, very trusting. Kimat al Hasam, when ultimately they got to Gan Eden, Daili Kamachvile. So the Malach HaMavis lifts up Rabbi Shimon Levi. I guess there's like a wall. Gan Eden is a gated community. So what happens is a wall. He lifts him up over the wall. So Rabbi Yeshua can see, Rabbi Shimon Levi can see his portion in Gan Eden. So listen to this. This is amazing. Shavar, Nafal Ugisa. Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi jumps the wall. He jumps the wall. Now, the amazing part about this is Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi is still alive. Still alive. So he's still alive. He jumps the wall into Gan Eden. Nafal Hugisa. He fell onto the other side of the wall. Nakti Begarna Diglime. But what happened? One little problem. The Malach HaMavis is holding onto the corner of Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi's garment. Amrale Bishvuasa Delo Asina. Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi said, I swear I'm not coming back. I'm not coming back. So Omer Kutshabichu, so must we've got a big problem. Malach HaMavis needs to bring Rabbi Shimon Levi out of Gan Eden, because you can only come to Gan Eden when you're dead. So he needs to bring him back to the world, and then he needs to take his life, and then he can go to Gan Eden. But now Rabbi Shimon Levi says, I'm sure I'm not coming back. So Moshe says, what do you do? So listen to this, the Ribono Shel Olam gets involved. Omer Kutshabichu, I itshal ashvuasa nihada.
Ilo, lo nehada. Rabbi said, listen to this. So Kosh Baruch said, well, let's see. Did Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi ever annul a vow? If he ever annulled a vow, he's got to come out. But if he never annulled one of his vows, one of his oaths throughout his life, then he could stay. As well as it's an incredible, incredible Mussar. So what the Rebbe Shalom is saying is, how trustworthy was he with his words? If he always upheld his words, then his koach adibor, his power of speech, is very powerful. But again, if he was the kind of person that vowed or made oaths but then went back on them, then his speech is not so powerful. So we'll say, so it turns out that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi had never annulled or violated an oath. Therefore, again, when he makes his shvua, the shvua stands, he's not coming back. So listen to this. So we'll say, so the Gemara says, so Amarle Havli Sakinoi. So listen to this. So the Malachama says, okay, fine. You're staying in Gan Eden, give me back my knife. So Lo Hava Kayoivle. So Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi is playing hardball with the Malachama. Again, also not a good idea. In any event, say so Yehoshua ben Levi is not giving him back the knife. So what happened? Nafka Baskolava Amra Havle Nihile Dimitva Libriasa. So a voice comes out from heaven and says, Rabbi Shimon Levi, give him back the knife, because the Malach HaMavis has work to do in this world. So Rabbi Shimon Levi gives him the knife. Listen to this. Machruz Elio Kamei Ponu Makom Lebar Livoi Ponu Makom Lebar Livoi. So we'll say, amazingly enough, Rabbi Shimon Levi is one of the few people who comes to Gan Eden without dying. Comes to Gan Eden again in a living state. So Gester Elio HaNavi announces, make space for Bar Livoi. That's Rabbi Shimon Levi. Make space for Bar Livoi. Azl Ashkechel Reb Shem Ben Yochai Dehavi Yosef Atlas Eser Tach Tekeviza. So he found Rashbi, Reb Shem Ben Yochai, is sitting on 13 chairs of fine gold. Omer Le, Atu Bar Livoi. So Reb Shem Ben Yochai says to Reb Shem Ben Levi, are you the one who they call Bar Livoi, Yoshua Ben Levi? Omer Lehein. He said, yes, but say, listen to this. So Reb Shem Ben Yochai, this conversation is amazing. Reb Shem Ben Yochai says to Reb Shem Ben Levi, tell me, Niras Akashas Biamecha, was there ever a rainbow seen in your days? And I must say, remember, the rainbow, as beautiful as it is a sign that HaKadosh Baruch Hu remembers the bris with Noach. That bris with Noach is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not going to destroy the world. But when you see Akashas, the Gemara says, it means that the world is deserving of being destroyed, but the Ribono Shel Olam will not go ahead and destroy it, again, out of deference to his promise with Noach. Only one issue, which is what? When you have a generation that has exceptional tzaddikim, the Gemara says there's no rainbow. And the Gemara actually gives the different generations where the rainbow was never seen in the schus of the tzaddik. So Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says to Rav Shimon Ben Levi, you know, they say you're such a tzaddik, tell me, was there a rainbow seen in your generation? So he was asking about, what's your level of true righteousness? Amar Lehein, to which Rav Shimon Bar Levi says, yes, there was a rainbow in my generation. Amar Imkein I Ata Bar Livoi. To which Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says, well, if that's the case, then apparently you're not Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. In other words, that you're not as great as they spoke about you in Gan Eden. To which the Gemara says, by the way, footnote, Velohi, Delo Havimidi, Ela Savar Lo Achsek Tivasal in Afshai. Well, in reality, the Gemara says, actually, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi's generation was one of the generations where there was no rainbow. So why did he say this to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai? Because it was that he felt that had he answered Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai truthfully, that there was not a rainbow, that people would have ascribed that lack of rainbow to Rabbi Shimon Levi's personal righteousness. And Rabbi Shimon Levi was not prepared to say that the reason why there was no rainbow was because of his personal righteousness. So amazingly enough, incredible humility, he essentially doesn't tell the truth to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. But in fact, there was no rainbow during his generation. Right? So listen to this. So that's the end of the Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi story. And Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi stays in Gan Eden. He stays in Gan Eden. He never dies. He stays in Gan Eden. So listen to this. Rabbi Chanina bar Papa, Shoshvine Hava. Now, this is very interesting. Rabbi Chanina bar Papa was friends with the Malach HaMavis. Whatever. I guess he's, I don't know. Hey, he's friends with the Malach HaMavis. However that works exactly. Ki Hava Kanecha Nafshe, when it was time for Rabbi Chanina bar Papa to die, Amrli Malach HaMavis, Zil Avet Leiru Usei. So he said to the Malach HaMavis, do for Rabbi Chanina bar Papa whatever he wants. So Beis Din Shlomo said, give him one last request. Azul Lagabevi is Chazilei. Malach HaMavis speaks to Rabbi Chanina bar Papa, and he says to him, Amrle, Shavki, listen to this, Rabbi Osei. This, Rabbi Osei, is very, very, very important. Shavki Tlasin Yom. So Rabbi Chanina bar Papa said, what? Give me another 30 days. Adin Nahadr Talmudai, because I need to review my learning. Rabbi Osei underlined this line, Da Amrei, Ashrei mi sheba lekan v'tamudo biyado. Because Rabbi say again, they say, praiseworthy is the one who comes to Olam Haba with his learning, v'tamudo biyado. Rabbi say, because you know what, after 120, you know what's going to happen at the gates of Gan Eden? There's a bechina. There's a test. And that test is on what you learn. Now, Rabbi say, now remember, again, Sisir Yosef, how can you ever go ahead and retain all the information you learn? So Rabbi say, the Maharal, Miprag says something amazing, Chudush HaGadol. So the Maharal says that as long as when you learn, you are attentive, as long as when you learn, you are serious, as long as when you learn, you devote yourself to your learning, then you will have Siyata Dishmaya and you will remember everything you learned at that entrance exam. If, however, when you learn, you're not serious, you squander your time, you play around, the person's elsewhere, then lemaisa inachinami, then a person might have some problems with recall at that moment of the entrance exam. But lemaisa, as long as a person maximizes their learning opportunities, they will pass that entrance exam. So give me another 30 days to review all of my learning, because they say, Asher mishabalakan v'tamudo biyado. Praiseworthy is the person who comes to this place and his learning is in his hands. Azal is chazile. So what happens? The basher tlas yom and azal is chazile. So we'll say, now 30 days later, Malach HaMavis comes back. Amrali achvili duchtoi. So we'll say, listen to this. So Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa says to the Malach HaMavis, can you show me my place in Gan Eden before I die? Amrali lechaye. So the Malach HaMavis says, fine. Amrali havli sekinach, dilma mivasas liba archa. So Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa says to the Malach HaMavis, do me a favor, give me your knife, lest you scare me during on the road, and I don't want to die on the way there. Amrali, so the Malach HaMavis says, Malach HaMavis, you want to do to me what your friend did to me? To which Rabbi Chanina, to the Malach HaMavis, Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa, you think you're going to pull a Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi on me again? You know, fool me once, it's fine. But I'm not giving anyone my knife. To which the Gemara says, Amar Lei, I see Sefer Torah v'chazi. Mi'ika midi d'chsiv bei d'lo kiyamte. So I'll say, listen to this. So Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa says, well, bring a Sefer Torah. Is there one thing in there that I did not go ahead and uphold? Amar Lei, mi'ichrasas beba'ali rasan v'asik patorah. So listen to this, Abosai. So the Malach HaMavis responds to Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa and says, this is amazing, Abosai. He says, then tell me, did you connect with Ba'alei Ra'asan and learn Torah by them? So listen to this. The Malach HaMavis gives Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa something amazing. He says to him, okay, great, you are Mekayim Torah, but did you ever go ahead and look out for the Ba'alei Ra'asan? Look what Rashi says over me. Ichras es Ba'alei Ra'asan va'asak le'Torah, ki dehava avet ihu shayimaskim b'nafsho l'chabir es ha'Torah. Well, say, listen to this. So ultimately, what he's saying is Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, you remember, as we said before, used to go ahead and learn Torah in close proximity to the Ba'alei Ra'asan and accomplished two things. Number one, allowing the Ba'alei Ra'asan to have other human connection. Number two, also showing the greatness of Torah. So the Malach HaMavis, Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa, I appreciate the fact that you went ahead and you learned all of this Torah, but tell me, did you connect with the Ba'alei Ra'asan? I will say, we'll have to stop over here for today. We'll pick up Emir Tzashem with Kinach Nafshe. I know I'm leaving a little bit of a cliffhanger, but Emir Tzashem will pick up with it tomorrow. The end of the story of Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa.